Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 318. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. It's good. About to head to another game tonight. So we're recording early. So we do apologize if you got your question in after 5 p.m. Eastern because it's earlier than our normal recording time today. But yeah, it's the sun is out. The sun's normally not out when we record. So plenty of natural light coming in, which is nice.
Yeah, it feels weird. The number, I think I can count the number of times we've recorded during the day. Maybe not on one hand, but definitely on two hands.
Yeah.
We used to record Sunday afternoon sometimes, every now and then. But yeah, it's supposed to be at night, 8 p.m. or later. So yeah, we're recording now. It's 5:18. So if you get your question then after that, we'll try to answer it over on Twitter. But got 14 questions in right now. Always got a good mix of questions here, mix of dynasty and prospect questions. So we'll get right into it, but real quick here, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoCleg. I'm Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. Make sure you check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Use that code Toolshed, get you 10% off any premium package. Check out our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our prospect dynasty rankings, daily write-ups, and a lot more. And of course, drop that 5-star rating and review if you haven't already. Those greatly mean a lot to us. All right. Enough of that. Let's get right into it. Starting out with a question on some injured prospects. It says, any hesitation changes on the oft-injured high-end guys like Jordan Lawler or Chase DeLauder? I've heard some recent doubts on Lawler specifically. You know, I am getting concerned about like these two and then others like it where it's just injury after injury. And in similar like spots on the body, like with DeLauder, it's his feet. You know, Lawler's been like, I think hamstring, quad, like legs. When you see multiple injuries over such a short time or even a couple years, I'm starting to get concerned because durability is like that hidden sixth tool. Like we all talk about five tools. Durability is just as important as any other tool, you know, out of the five scouting tools, in my opinion, because you can't stay on the field. Or if you're limited by injury in some way, you can't showcase those tools, at least not to the full extent of your abilities. Yeah, especially with Lawler, how he's back on the IL. The Lauder's only been in, what, maybe 10 games this year or something like that with all his foot injuries. Currently out is again. So, yeah, guys like this, I'm starting to get pretty concerned by. I'm not going to drastically change my ranking on them because just looking at the player, the talent, I'm very high on both these guys. And I think they have very fantasy-friendly skill sets, and everyone that's listened and read my work knows that I've been high on these guys since their respective draft classes. But yeah, I'm definitely concerned about both of them right now and their durability moving forward.
Yeah, I think that you have to be a bit concerned. I mean, Lawler, you know, would have thought by this point he would have been back, but hamstring struggles have not been good at all. And you definitely don't like to see that. And you know, when you're bouncing back and forth and trying to get back into action, and it's been really hard for him. He also had surgery for UCL tendon, his right thumb. So it's kind of been like all over the board for Jordan Lawler. And I just want to see him back on the field because the talent level's there. But as of last week, it's out for 4 to 6 more weeks with a grade 1 hamstring. It's, you certainly want to see him in game action, but so far it's been very limited this year. He had 7 games at the complex and 4 in AAA, which just not enough of a sample. It's like we need to see him on the field. DeLauder, I actually think there is some serious reasons to be worried. Having constant issues with your feet, like that's, I think that's something to be worried about. He's, this time it's a sprained toe, and so it's keeping him out for a little while. Turf toe, sprained toe, I've seen both reports here, but he's been dealing with a lot of injuries throughout his career, and we've seen turf toe ruin football players' career, feet issues for basketball players. Like, he had a broken foot too earlier in the year. This isn't the first ever time he's dealt with feet injuries before. And talking to some people, I know a guy that worked with the baseball team at JMU, and he's even expressed some worries with the injuries dating back to the college days. And so, yeah, the talent level's there for Chase DeLauder, but I think that we have to see him play consistently, and he hasn't really done that. I think that the performance obviously looked terrible this year when he was in AA, but I think we can assume that he was dealing with injury then. So yeah, they're going to take a little bit of a hit in my rankings, so I'm concerned.
I still don't even know what the difference is between turf toe and sprained toe, because I just Googled what is turf toe just to get the definition of it, and the new AI overview that Google has, he says turf toe is a sprain of the ligaments. So it's a sprained toe, sprain of the ligaments and capsule of the big toes. Here's a word for you. Metatarsophalangeal joints. That's about 26 letters, way too many letters. But yeah, so basically sprained toe. And I think it's just a conspiracy theory for this is DeLauder did this on purpose so people can stop talking about how ugly his swing finishes. That's what I'm rolling with now. But it's concerning. Both these guys, I had Lawler as high as I think 3 or 4 of my rankings. He's been top 10 for a good while now. And I had DeLauder into my top 10. I think I was one of the first ones to do so and go that high on him. And the talent is absolutely top 10 caliber, in my opinion, still is. But yeah, it's you got to factor in durability. We do it with major leaguers. We can do it with minor leaguers as well. So it's definitely concerning. But hopefully, this year is probably not a lost year for both of them, but close to it. So hopefully 2025, both these guys can stay healthy. Lawler can get up to Arizona again, and DeLauder can get closer, and they can put all this crap behind them, hopefully. But we shall see on that. It remains to be seen. All right, next question here. How far does Aroves Martinez drop in your rankings? I was actually just looking at this. He was in the 75 range for me. Now he's in the 110 range. He's going to be out basically the rest of the season with that 80-game suspension. We talked about him a good bit last episode. I won't go too deep into it, but my long-term thoughts on him haven't really changed much. I saw the power before any of these PEDs. I don't think it helped him that much. So I still think he's a 250-ish hitter and that could hit 30 home runs or something like that. So what I'm looking at with him, and so I had to move him down because he's going to miss the rest of the season, but he's still like a top 100-ish caliber prospect for me. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think there's reason to be concerned. We already had concerns about the contact, and I think that's still an issue. PEDs don't change contact, right, in my opinion. So that's important. Power-wise, I don't think we see a big fall-off, honestly. He's always been a big power guy. So, long-term, it's no thoughts have really changed that much. It's just, we want to see him back on the field, and we're not going to get that this year, which is obviously a bit concerning. But, you hope he comes back next year, has a full offseason to get things back together, and can step up at the major league level next year and look like the hitter we think he can be.
I'm sure a lot of Toronto fans wanted him up as their second baseman, but no, you're going to get Spencer Horowitz and you're going to like it. And he's actually hitting pretty well right now. So no big fall off there. Keep it right in Toronto. Go a few levels down. Next question is about Emmanuel Bonilla. Asks, is Emmanuel Bonilla worth owning as a deep sleeper? Big bonus, but doesn't seem like he's doing much. Wonder if I should just keep holding. What are your thoughts on Bonilla here, Chris? Obviously, I think it depends on how deep we're talking here, but obviously there's a lot of talent here with Bonilla. Been lackluster so far, 36 games at the complex, 226, 287, 350. K rates around 33%, three home runs, two steals, and 150 plate appearances. What are your thoughts here on Bonilla and how you valuing him right now?
Yeah, so Bonilla is interesting. He's a big, strong frame, got plenty of raw power in the profile. I think the hit tool is still a question mark, and it's one where ultimately I'm not totally sure where it falls. He's still young. He just turned 18 to begin the year. I'm looking at the profile and saying, all right now he's striking out a 32% clip. That's concerning. He's not walking at all. He's hyper aggressive. And that wasn't really the case last year in the DSL. Like, he was showing more patience and less strikeouts. But also the fact that you're a power hitter with a 637 OPS is a little bit concerning as well. He's hitting a lot of balls on the ground. Another concerning aspect. I feel like I'm just throwing out flaws here in the profile. And I don't mean to do. It's been, you know, almost 3 weeks since he's had an extra base hit, which is wild to see. And I think that right now in most formats, there's no reason to hold. There's so many guys popping up every day. Like, there's guys in the Dominican and the complex that are extremely good, that are showing good skills, while Emmanuel Bonilla is sitting by the wayside and his value's tanking pretty much, you know, every day that he's not performing, while you could roster somebody with much more upside. I'll say more upside, but I guess at least that has more perceived value, and those are more valuable in my opinion. So, you know, ultimately, yeah, I'm moving on in most cases, unless it's like a super deep league, but usually there's going to be someone to pick up.
Churn and burn, maybe. That's what we've talked about so many times on this podcast. And yeah, Bonilla's got the upside, sure, but you can find a player with similar level of upside that's hitting better right now. And you know, if that doesn't work, you move on to the next person, or maybe you move back to Bonilla if he starts hitting well. It's just, especially the deeper the league, the more you get churn and burn the back end of that roster. And yeah, I'm not out on him by any means. There are some red flags that Chris pointed out. So definitely not opposed to it, depending on, you know, who's available to pick up in your league. Next question here, going over to the Cincinnati Reds org. It says, what's up with Hector Rodriguez and his future outlook? So far this year, he is played 67 games with high A Dayton, 300, 336, 433 slash line, 13 doubles, 4 triples, 5 home runs, 8 steals, 14 walks to 30 strikeouts. He's doing what I expected out of him. I mean, he's always been a pretty solid contact hitter. Power has been, you know, underwhelming. Maybe he's a 40 grade power guy long term. You know, even in, if he's still in Cincinnati, he might be like a 12, 15 homer guy. I don't think he's ever gonna be like 20 plus anything like that. And he's a decent runner, so I think he can give you maybe 20 steals over a full season. But will he be a full season guy? Does he project as a starter, more of a fourth outfielder? Not sure on that one. That's, I think that still remains to be seen here. But yeah, he's performing as expected. And, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts with Rodriguez?
He's hyper aggressive. He is one of the most aggressive hitters in the game. It's weird because he chases at a higher clip than literally any prospect. But he's sitting here making contact. Pretty serviceable, and I'll say more than serviceable, very good 83% rate this year, which is just impressive to say the least. To see a hitter be able to do that and chase at the clip that they do is rare. But Rodriguez is a rare kind of hitter, I'd say, where he makes it work. Do I think that it continues to work as he moves up? I think that's still to be determined. I think there's a lot of people out there that love Hector Rodriguez. I mean, he's 20 years old. He's shown some good skills. Last year, obviously, popped off 16 home runs in single A. This year, he has just 5. And the slash line still remains good. Like, he's going to be a low OBP guy just because the fact that he's swinging everything. He's rarely going to take a walk. But he's putting balls in play, and he's making things happen. So at the end of the day, I still have my concerns. I think the power's below average. The EVs aren't great. It's a insane chase rate on him. He's not a good runner. I don't think that he's going to really steal bases in as he moves up in the major. I know, like, you look and say, oh, man, he's still 18 last year. He's got 8 so far this year. He's not going to be a stolen base guy. So I think for fantasy, it's like, what does he provide? And I'm not really sure what that answer is going to be, because he's going to have to hit for good average. And, yeah, obviously he's a Red. He's going to play in Great American Ballpark. That's cool. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just not really buying. I think a lot of people have him top 100. And I'm selling that really hard. And if I'm wrong, I'm fine missing out. But I'm not going to ignore all the warning signs here. The EVs, the chase rate, the aggressiveness. I just can't ignore those things.
Yeah, it's hard not to. I personally think he will steal at least a little bit. He's not going to be a super impact guy, but yeah. But if it's only if he's going to be a low power guy, you need the speed to be impactful. And I don't think he'll get to that level. I have him at 122 right now. I think I had him top 100 at some point, but I still like him a little bit. I don't know. It's weird. There's a few projects in the Cincinnati org that I'm weird profiles. Not really sure how to value them long term, but there's still some good here. But as Chris mentioned, there's high chase rate, but K rate's only 10.5%. Like I said, at least he puts the bat on the ball. He's got that going for him, but doesn't walk. And the walk rate's about 5% right now. Some green and some red flags here for Hector Rodriguez. Next question here. We're going over to the MLB draft. Who do you think will go 1.1 in the MLB draft? Charlie Condon, Travis Bazana? I know. So this is more so like who work for the actual draft and not so much our 1-1 for FYPD. So we got Cleveland on the clock with the first overall pick. I feel Bazana is slightly more Cleveland's type of player than a Charlie Condon. I could be wrong there. They could go under slot, but between those two, I think I would lean like 65-35 to Bazana. How about you?
I don't think they take either. I think
you think they're going like under slot?
They're going major under slot.
Yeah, which... that's always a possibility with a team like Cleveland.
They're going to take whoever gives them the best deal. And I don't think Condon or Travis Bazana give him a deal. No. Bazana, probably a little bit under, but I just don't see it. It's going to be really interesting at the top of the draft. I'll say that. It's a long way to go still. A lot of things can change, but I'm pretty confident in one thing, and it's that they go under slot, neither of these guys. Right now, J.J. Weatherholt's the buzz. I think that there's potential they go prep too. Connor Griffin, there's some talk there. You know, it could change. Things change with the blow of the wind in the draft, and teams are doing their due diligence on everybody, and they're seeing where they can get the best deal. And I'm more confident than not that neither Condon or Travis Bazana are the pick at the moment.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And if they do go, if they're looking to go under slot, they're not going to get that, like you said, from the top two guys. You won't get that from Chase Burns. You won't get that from Jack. You won't get that from like Hagen Smith. You got to start going down. I don't think you'd even get that from like a Nick Kurtz or anybody like that. So yeah, you probably have to go prep, maybe a Bryce Rayner, but did they go that far? I don't know. Weatherholt, it does seem like a decent fit there as well in the middle infielder, but they got plenty of middle infielders. I don't really think going to that well, but we'll see. But if they do go one of the big two, I lean Bazana, but yeah, like Chris mentioned, there's a good chance they go under slot as well. Next question here. How do you value MLB players who are upper 20s versus young prospects in their lower 20s? Well, that's old for a prospect, but versus young prospects in the low 20s when rebuilding. What are your thoughts there, Chris?
So I think that too many people look at dynasty and rebuilding as too long of a window. So most players are saying they're trying to trade off 27-year-olds, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Right. If you cannot rebuild a team in 2 to 3 years, then I think there's a problem. So I would look and say, all right, upper 20s, cool. Like they can be part of a team that I'm rebuilding. 27, 28, 29, okay. Yeah. If you're looking at 2 years out, then yeah, it's a 29-year-old should still fit on your roster, because very rarely do players start declining at 31. Obviously, some do, not all do. I think in a rebuild, also people get way too happy with prospects. Yep. At the end of the day, prospects fail. More often than not, we see prospects fail, and that makes it harder. I always want to have the experienced young MLB guy over a young prospect. Like, even if it's a post-hype guy, even if it's someone that has failed at the major league level, then I think that it's even better. If it's a guy that has zero buzz, like we're actually going to talk about one of these guys down in a couple more questions, but good prospect comes up, fails, maybe they bust, but at the same time, maybe you can get a good deal on them. So my preference when rebuilding is always going to be to take a guy that's already in the major leagues and at least already shown something over a guy that has zero experience. If they're a top prospect, okay. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'll take my chances on the experienced guy over the prospect.
And we've seen that a lot this year of even the top prospects coming up and struggling. It just shows that there's no sure thing. Even the most highest floor prospects can come up and struggle. That's just how it is in baseball. And yeah, and then I know you've been asked this question too, and I know we've both been tagged in some of these. I love when I get the question something along the lines of, I'm not contending, rebuilding right now. What should I try to get for Kyle Tucker? I'm like, nothing. You hold Kyle Tucker. Or what should I get for like Yordan? No, you don't trade those guys. If you got like a Zach Wheeler or credit this thing like Marcelo Ozuna, some guy like the 32, 33 year old, like that range. Okay. You want to sell off guys like that? Sure. But Tucker will still be, we're assuming he'll still be really damn good in your contention window, whether that's 2-3 years, he'll still be 29 or whatever, 30 at that point in time, still be a stud. So you don't want, you got to think about, look ahead, like, all right, realistically, like, am I going to be contending next year, 2 years out? I mean, look at your team now. Like, all right, is this guy going to be still performing as he is now in a couple of years, or obviously use your best guess, or is he probably going to be falling off at that point in time? Like, Tucker's not going to be falling off in 2 years. So yeah, don't trade your late 20s studs. Look more in like the early to mid 30s range. Those are the guys that you send them to one of the contending teams for a younger hitter or a prospect or something like that. So that's how I look at it. Next question here. I'm sitting on Kimbrough, Lawler, and Horton in a dynasty league with sub 75 prospects rostered. Rays are terrible with prospects. I don't know what that this is alluding to, but and the D-backs love Perdomo. Maybe just playing them, probably. Any interest in the three of them this year? And what kind of expectations do you have for them in 2025 and beyond? So at this point, Lawler maybe gets a cup of coffee end of the year, but you know, I'm not really banking on him making a big impact this year. Horton's been dealing with some injuries as well. Maybe, again, maybe late season for him. And then Caminero's out, still out for another. How much longer is Caminero out for? Another few weeks, I think it is.
Yeah. He's back in action by the All-Star break.
Yeah. So Caminero is probably the one that makes the biggest impact this year. I'm still very high on them long term. Caminero is a top four prospect for me. I think he could get up there into the tier one of third baseman soon. And maybe not this year, but he has that type of upside. We already talked about Lawler. And I still have Gade Horton as a top five pitching prospect, even though this year hasn't been, you know, quite as sunshine and rainbows as it was last year for him. But I still think he's one of the few in baseball that has frontline upside for pitching prospects. So still very high long term. Obviously, they're still absolutely should be rostered in Dynasty League that rosters near 75 prospects. But I don't think outside of maybe Caminero, you're probably not getting much of an impact from them this year.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't think Horton has done himself any justice to get the call, maybe down the stretch, but I'm not sure it's valuable enough where it's like, all right, this guy's going to provide me what I want. Lawler, obviously, we talked about the injury. That's a concern, and I don't think they rush him to the majors. Caminero is your best chance, but how many plate appearances does he get? Like 200? I don't know. I'm not sure maybe how much he actually gets.
Yeah.
It's so his
best case scenario.
The expectations in 2025 and beyond are Caminero has the power to be one of the best power hitters in the game. The exit velocities are elite here. Still believe Horton has SP2, SP3 upside. I think he's a great arm. And Lawler, I have a little more questions about. 75 prospects or less rostered, like it always depends on who you're picking up. And I think if any of them, like is Horton, because pitching prospects change all the time. I don't know. That's a tougher spot. And when you're in that kind of league, I would prefer to trade them if you can. I think some still value Lawler like a top 10 prospect. And I think that Horton has a lot of trade value as well. So I'd look to trade those guys and get some MLB help if I could.
Yeah, that's a good call there for sure. Next question on Abimelech Ortiz. victim of external factors or sell high windows shut on his fingers. I like how that was worded. But yeah, Chris, it's been a pretty tough year for Abimelech Ortiz with Double A Frisco. He broke out last year at 33 home runs and 109 games between low A and high A, and had a decent little showing out in the AFL as well, 3 home runs and more walks than strikeouts in 12 games. But this year with Double A Frisco, 58 games, 228 plate appearances, slashing 179, 246, 309 with only 5 home runs, 16 walks to 54 strikeouts. Not like a huge strikeout rate, but not walking a lot and just not making contact. So what are your thoughts here? Are you looking maybe buy low, or are you almost out the door with
Ortiz is tough because he was so good last year. He struggled in the AFL though, which was weird because I feel like that was a better environment than he was in single A and high A to hit. But here we are, and the struggles have carried over. He's got a sub 600 OPS, which is not good at all. And even well below that, 555. This is a guy that actually showed good contact. The contact rates were in line with Xavier Isaac, as were the EVs last year, which is so interesting. He did chase a little more. Isaac's obviously way more patient hitter. But I looked at Ortiz and was like, all right, this guy is legit. But he has carried some major struggles in the year against Double A pitching in the Texas League, which is a very hitter-friendly environment. He's hitting less fly balls. The home run to fly ball rate has dropped substantially, like 28.6% in high last year down to 8.3% this year. He's striking out less, which is absolutely weird to look at. It's like, all right, so what's going on with this guy? Contact rates are actually right in line with last year. It's above league average slightly, not much, but I think he's better than a 179 hitter. His BABIP is very low at 213. Last year was 393 in single A and 322, which is more normalized in high A. So yeah, that should tick up. The walk rates are down. He's putting more balls in play, but God, the results are bad. I think that it's probably you just move on because there's other options that are sitting out there while you're sitting on Ortiz. There's plenty of guys popping up every day. I mentioned it earlier in the show. I'd move on if you could, because I think there's other guys that could provide plenty of value.
How far is he dropped in your rankings right now, Chris? Is he still even like top 150 for you anymore?
No, I think he's like in the more of the 250 range. But
yeah,
I think there's plenty of reason to be concerned here. And like I said, when I think the biggest issue is that dynasty managers and patients cause this guy to have absolutely no value right now. Like, regardless of what the actual is, he's having no value.
Yep. Yeah. And like I said, it's tough because this is a guy that shot up rankings pretty hard last year. He was getting up in the top 50 in some fantasy focus rankings. But yeah, got to make contact. That's the biggest key here. And he's not doing it right now. One more prospect question on Blake Mitchell asking, what is the ceiling of a Blake Mitchell? Mitchell is currently in low A Columbia in the Carolina League, was the number 8 overall pick last year. Currently slashing 249, 398, 445 in 264 plate appearances, 12 doubles, 9 home runs, and oddly enough, 18 steals. You know, decent little showing for Blake Mitchell, and obviously he's good defensively as well with a great arm. What is the ceiling, do you think, of a Blake Mitchell for fantasy, Chris?
Mitchell is going to play much better in OBP league. He's a pretty interesting profile. And honestly, like, I like him a lot more now that I've seen him versus when I came into the year. Like, I was pretty low on him. He struggled at the complex pretty mightily. He's interesting. He's passive, but not too passive. His contact rates are questionable. There's a lot of strikeouts, but he makes up for it in the zone. His end zone contact rates are good. His chase rate is very good. And then the EVs are solid. Like, he hits the ball quite hard and he's pretty good behind the plate. He's a really good athlete. And you think about Mitchell and it's like, all right, this guy's not going to run much, but he's actually got some speed. He's stolen some bases this year, even though I'm not going to put a lot of stock into single A stolen base totals. Can't overlook 18 in 59 games from a catcher. Nonetheless, Mitchell is interesting. I think he has the kind of profile of being an everyday catcher at the major league level, just due to the well-rounded skill set. And for fantasy purposes, he may be a 250 hitter, but he also may get on base at 350 clip, which is huge. And there's certainly plus power in the profile. He's put up really good EVs this year as a 19-year-old. So, yeah, I'm pretty in on him.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, I think, one of the more underrated catchers in baseball right now, for sure. And yeah, I don't think he's going to be a stud, but could he be I don't think he'll be like a top 10 catcher either, but could he be a back end C1, high end C2? Sure. That's where his value could be. And yeah, we'll see if this stolen base thing continues, as nobody expected him to steal any bases, even in low A, where you can, when I could probably steal bases in low A. But yeah, 18 in 59 games is definitely noteworthy. Yeah, and that walk rate is just super high right now. He's at 48 walks in 59 games. It's 18.2% walk rate right there. So, but K rate's also a little high right now too, as well, 29.9%. But I think a little bit of that is him being a little bit too passive maybe at times and getting into deeper counts. But it definitely some good skills here with Blake Mitchell. All right, moving over to some of the MLB Dynasty focus questions here. First one is on Tyler Soderstrom. Says, Soderstrom has a higher WRC plus in the big leagues this year than he has had any stop in the minors except A-ball in 2021. Is this real growth or just a hot streak and a small sample? I'm not really sure it fits into either. I don't think it's just a hot streak, but he hasn't really had a ton of growth from last year's stint in the major leagues to this year, and they're pretty equal sample sizes. 138 play appearances last year, 126 this year, because the contact rates are pretty similar. They've gone up a little bit, but not a ton. He's up to 80.8% zone. That's 3% increase from last year. Overall, he went from 67.1 to 67.6. So again, basically right in line there. Chase rate's about the same. Swing rate's about the same. So not many big differences there. But he's been hitting the ball a lot harder this year. Exit velocity is up from 89.3 to 93.7. Barrel from 6% to 15.3. Hard hit from 39.8 to 56.9. My thought hasn't really changed on Soderstrom. I've been kind of lukewarm on him. I like Soderstrom. I think I maybe like him a little bit less than most rankers do, but the power's there, and I think he could be a 250-ish hitter with 25 or so home runs. Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at here. Still has a little bit of a higher K rate, 29.6% right now, 31.2 last year. So yeah, I think he's definitely still decent. If you bought low last year, it's given that pretty terrible slash line that he had when he hit 160, 232, 240. I think you probably got a good value. I think he's decent. I don't think he's going to be a stud or anything like that, but maybe a guy you can, maybe a top 200 or so player or something like that. But what are your thoughts on Soderstrom right now, Chris?
I think that Soderstrom is certainly coming into his own. He's always a prospect that I really liked. He always had questions, but the numbers underlying data, they were always really good. He was aggressive. Yeah, he chased a lot, but he ran really good in zone contact rates and he hit for power. And I think we're seeing that now. He's had a massive power outbreak. He's got a 15% barrel rate, 93.7 average EV, which is crazy. That's like top of the league. Hard hit rates top of the league at 57%. Barrel rates top of the league, hitting at ideal angles. He is striking out still. It's a 29.6% K rate for Soderstrom at this point, which is concerning, but he's lifting it more this year, which I think is, you know, important. The ground ball rate in the majors last year was pretty poor, 54 to 40% this year. So a substantial drop in ground balls. The zone contact is up. That's notable, up 3 percentage points. And the chase rate's right in line with league average. I don't think that it's just a hot streak. Soderstrom is an interesting guy. He's still young. He's 22 years old, but I wish he would just catch some. He's first base only, and the bat can play there, but it's going to play much better behind the plate. So, yeah, I think that's really the biggest thing. So, I believe in Soderstrom to an extent, but not like, you know, he's going to be like an all-star or anything.
Yeah, I think he's going to settle in a similar range overall to what Andrew Vaughn is. I think maybe a little more power for Soderstrom, a little less average there. Like Vaughn's probably like 270 and 20, Soderstrom like 250 and 25, something like that. But I think that's where he settles in overall long term, is in that Andrew Vaughn range. But yeah, definitely would be much more fun if he had that C next to his name. But still can provide some decent value at first base. Speaking of first base, next question is about a pair of the stud first basemen, asking whose profile do you have more confidence in for the next 3 years, Pete Alonso or Matt Olson is 30 years old. Alonzo's 29, so not a big difference there. Who do you have more confidence in over the next 3 years, Chris?
I think they're pretty close. It's honestly splitting hairs. I think obviously Olson's picked it up. Alonzo, he's been fine. Like, he's pretty much in line with what he's always done. I think people are freaking out. 16 home runs for Alonzo, only 12 for Matt Olson at this point. But yeah, these guys are going to end up getting to their power. I'm not worried a lick about that. Alonzo's a year younger, but at the end of the day, honestly, I think we're splitting hairs. I wonder if Alonzo's traded. So that could be a factor too. Like, where does he end up? If it's a contending team that like has a good ballpark, then man, his stock could actually go up some. I'm not saying it's going to happen. He's a free agent coming up. Do they trade him? We shall see. But yeah, right now, yeah, I think it's splitting hairs. If I have to pick one, probably pick Matt Olson. But yeah, I'm pretty indifferent on it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was going to say. It's close. I think they're both going to be top five first basemen for the foreseeable future, at least the next few years. And we've seen the upside that each of them has. They both have 50-plus home run seasons over the last few years. Olson had that 52 home run year three, four years ago. And then Olson obviously went berserk last year. So yeah, I think they're both top five. I guess I feel a little safer about Olson, but I'm not overly concerned with either. And yeah, like I saw some, I think it was one of Jeff Passan's articles that he was saying that if the Red Sox continue to be in contention for a wild card, like we have the third wild card right now, that one of the guys that we should go after would be Pete Alonso. And I would freaking love that. I don't know what it would cost to get a Pete Alonso, but getting him into a place like Fenway with the monster in left field, I think that would be absolutely phenomenal, both for the Red Sox and for Pete Alonso's value. But then again, in the National League, it's, I think literally every team besides Miami and Colorado are still in that damn playoff picture. You look at the Cincinnati Reds have the third worst record in the National League, or the Reds and the Cubs are tied at 37-43. And there's still only four games out of the third wild card. It's a massive cluster there, but I guess that's what baseball wants. So we'll see. And then the Mets are right in. Then the Mets are only a game and a half out of the third playoff spot at 38-39, right behind Arizona. And then the three wild cards of Atlanta, St. Louis, and San Diego. So we'll see if the Mets start falling out of it. Maybe they do trade Alonso. And that could be a nice little boon for his value there if he goes to some place like Fenway or another good hitter's park there. Next question here. What is going on with Bobby Miller? Buy low, question mark. What do you think, Chris? I'm not really worried about Bobby Miller. It's been kind of a weird year for him. Obviously missing time with injury. Only made 5 starts so far. Has a 6.75 ERA and a 1.65 whip in those starts. But I mean, we've seen Bobby Miller, and he's a guy that literally has top 10 fantasy SP upside here. So, yeah, I would absolutely buy low. I'm not really concerned. The walk rate has gone way up, but maybe still injury is still affecting him a little bit. I don't know. It's hard to say what the issue is with Miller right now, but in terms of the buy low question, absolutely. I'm still incredibly high in Miller long-term and still think he could be a fantasy ace. But what were your thoughts? Do you agree with that, or are you more concerned about Miller right now?
I still think he's pitching a little hurt. Like, yeah, if we're being honest, I don't think he's fully healthy. I think he's doing what he can, trying to get back on the field for the team. But I'm not sure the shoulder's 100% right. So yeah, I'm not writing him off yet. Obviously, I'm not going to write him off at all because I still think he's a really good arm. But I will say I do think that Bobby Miller's not pitching 100%. No direct insight to that, but that's my read on the situation. So also got thrown in the Coors Field in his first start back. Not a situation you want to be in. I know his start against the White Sox was not good last time out, but if he's healthy, Bobby Miller's going to be fine. So if you're looking long-term, yeah, I think it's fine to buy low.
Yeah, it's small sample size, but it's really just his two fastballs. His four-seamer's been getting obliterated. 282 batting average again, 667 slug, and all four of his home runs allowed. And then the changeup, curveball, and slider are all doing, well, curveball not so much, but that's at least missing bats. But then the sinker he's only using it 9.4% of the time. Sinker has an 800 batting average against and a 1,000 slug. And he's down about 1.4 miles an hour on the sinker and 1 mile an hour on the four-seamer. Yeah, I think he's still pitching a little hurt as well. But again, just showing you what the upside he has. These similar pitchers to him based on velo and movement, on Savant, Jared Jones, Garrett Cole, Jacob deGrom, Luis Severino, and Hunter Green. So pretty good list to be included on there. So definitely buy low on Bobby Miller. Next question. I just traded for Bo Bichette in my Dynasty League. Traded away Neto, Roman Anthony, and Daniel Hudson. I bought low on him, but wanted to see if it was a good move. But I think buying low on Bo Bichette is a fine move. I actually just traded him away in Highlander to Jordan Rosenblum. I got back Randy Arozarena, and there might have been some other minor pieces in that deal. I can't remember at this point. It was a couple weeks ago. I'm not out on Bichette by any means, but is first, second round Bichette ever going to walk through that door again? That's the kind of question I have right now. And if I had to give you an answer right now, I'd probably say no. The fact that he's not really running much anymore, even when back in 2022, he gave you 13 steals, 24 home runs. Quality of contact is still fine, even though the barrel rates plummeted a good amount, but still above average EV and hard hit rate. Obviously, he still has a good approach. It doesn't strike out a lot, but does not give you that categorical oomph that he was giving you a few years ago. And that whole lineup, for the most part, is pretty down this year. Springer's having a really bad year. Varsho's been really inconsistent to the point where they've had to rely on guys like David Schneider and Spencer Horowitz and guys like that. In general, I think that was a fine move, just looking at the three you gave up for Bichette. And I think buying low is also a decent move. But at this point, Bichette's more like a top 75 or so guy for me. So if you have to give up like a top 50 price tag to get him, I probably wouldn't do that. But you didn't do that here, so I think it was a fine move.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fine move too. I'm not the highest on Bichette. I think he could bounce back, but again, like, Anthony's a big piece to lose here. I think that at the end of the day, it's a fine deal. And if you're in win now, certainly take that shot.
Yep, absolutely. One more question here to round out the show, and it's on Cole Reagan's question. Asks, what is fair value for Cole Reagan's? He's been on a stellar run, but he's had Tommy John surgery twice, I believe. How does that factor into his risk profile? If he was initially coming back from it, yeah, that factors in a lot. But at this point, Reagan's has been one of the, top 10 pitchers in baseball since he went over from Texas to Kansas City last July or whatever it was. So yeah, at this point, I'm very much buying Cole Reagan's. He had He had the two starts. He's had two starts of seven earned runs allowed. He blew up against Baltimore on April 20th. And then the Angels on May 11th. But outside of that, it's been 0, 1, 2, or 3 earned runs allowed. Overall, you're looking at 3.03 ERA, 1.15 whip, and 17 starts, 29.9% strikeout rate, 8.2% walk rate. You just watch him pitch. I mean, he can miss bats with all five of his pitches. All five have a whiff rate of at least 23.2%, with three of those being over 30, and then the changeup up at 46.8%. One of the better changeups in baseball. Yeah, I think there was some risk, obviously, when he initially came back, and that's why he was not highly ranked really anywhere. But at this point, we've seen, I think he's made around 30 starts since he moved into the rotation when he came to Kansas City last year, and he's been, again, one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball or something like that. So, yeah, I'm very much buying in. But if you wanted to trade him, if you are a little more hesitant because of the previous injuries that he's had, he's still only 26. He feels like a guy that should be a little bit older than that, but still only 26. I would not trade him straight up for anything less than a top 50, 60-ish overall player. And if you want to deal him for prospects, which I wouldn't really recommend, I would need at least, a top 20 and a top 30 or 40, at least two top 30 or so prospects. But I wouldn't recommend going that route. But in terms of value, I think he's top 50 or at least very close to it.
Yeah, I have zero questions about Cole Reagan's at this point. He's really good. If you're uncomfortable, go ahead and cash out, but you better get a really good return for him. That's all I got to say. So
yep.
I would not sell low at all. I think you've got to get a high-end asset because Reagan's is legit. He's pitched like one of the best pitchers in baseball all year and dating back to last year after he was traded to Kansas City. So yeah, I am way in here.
Yeah, I just actually, he's my ace in my home keeper league team now. I just traded away Corbin Burns, who had been my ace for really since 2020, 2021, had him since back then, traded him away for Freddie Peralta and Pablo Lopez. I think that's going to be a good deal. We'll see. But yeah, that leaves Reagans as my top arm, and I'm fine with that. I think he's a top 10 pitcher right now, and I think he should be ranked as such. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to everyone for tuning in and for all the great questions. We greatly appreciate those that sent those in. We will be back with you again on Monday. Hope everyone has a good weekend. Until then, take care.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation, but the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.